The Guardian.
01 811 8055. Oh, come on, pick up, pick up, pick up.
Hi there, is that Tim Davey, the soon-to-be grandest fromage in BBC Radio? Oh, it's great, great. Yeah, it's Ben Green here, producer of the Media Talk podcast. Listen, I was wondering if you could do me a favour, Tim. Matt Wells is away this week, and I'm looking for a cover presenter. Have you you got any ideas?
Wow, I wonder what.
Jonathan Ross. Wow, he'd be good. How much does he want?
Wow.
Out of my budget. Anyone else in mind?
George Lamb.
Can I get back to you on that? I mean, personally, I love him, but, you know. What about some of the Radio 4 bunch?
Steve Hewlett.
Steve Hewlett, yeah, he'd be brilliant. Oh, what's that? Oh, Mark Damaser doesn't want him to be on a media discussion show with occasional swearing. Fair enough.
Evan Davis?
Oh, what do you think about Evan Davis? No, just a little bit too gay for us. You know what, Tim? I'll have a rummage around and see what I can find here at the office. Thanks anyway, mate, and good luck with the job.
Hello, I'm Robert Freeman, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, as the Bee braces itself for an economic downturn, we'll discuss its latest annual report, executive pay, and the future of the licence fee.
Again.
Also in the podcast...
Most guys will call me Doctor, most girls will call me Foxy. That's, you know, those will be my names, they'll be them for life.
We'll hear from Neil, Dr. Fox, about the secret formula to being king of the jocks. Plus, Global Radio swings its axe, but Channel 4 Radio looks ready to launch. We'll round up the rest of the news in the commercial radio world. And...
Exterminate! Exterminate!
With news on the magnificent end to this season's Doctor Who. Smile and wave at the commuters around you, for this is Media Talk from The Guardian. Yep, so Matt Wells is away this week, but my, what a panel we've assembled to make up for that disappointment. Janine Gibson is Media Guardian's editor-in-chief. Apparently you're doped up to the nines at the moment.
I did fall over in the car park, and I have taken quite a lot of over-the-counter, I hasten to add, prescription painkillers.
Excellent. Media analyst and managing director of Kids Co TV, Paul Robinson, is also here. Was that a bit of career suicide there from producer Ben at the start?
I think he was great. I want to be back on this podcast.
That thing that you just played, we're not going to put that on the podcast, are
we? That's going at the start.
Oh, dear.
That's good.
Speaking of career suicide, worry you not. Just because I'm in the presenter's chair doesn't mean that Good Week, Bad Week is making a return. I know, sighs all round. Right, let's get things rolling.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Fox, and you're listening to Media Talk on guardian.co.uk.
He'll be along later, but right now we're going to talk about the BBC's annual report. This week, Director-General Mark Thompson's defended six-figure pay rises for many of the Beeb's executive directors, saying the corporation must offer competitive salaries for top jobs. The annual report also stated that the BBC's succeeded in rebuilding trust after a series of phone-in scandals over the last 12 months. However, the DG warned that the current economic climate is likely to put further pressure on BBC finances, which could result in another wave of redundancies. Janine, what did you think of the trust's and Mark Thompson's report? B+, C-?
Oh, look, can we just... let's just look at some of those things that you just said first in a little bit of detail. Right, there's an economic downturn and all the media companies, all the commercial media companies are performing very, very badly. I think ITV's share price at the moment is approximately 15 pence. It may be a tiny bit high, but I'm not much exaggerating. Channel 4 apparently so broke that they're having to cut back all their budgets. You know, this is what we read last week. Channel 5, hard to say, but, what I don't think they're doing is cruising around BBC employees, offering them an extra 100 grand in their pay packets to come and work for them. Quite the reverse. So the argument that somehow you have to sort of boost BBC executives. What we all know is that when the commercial media sector is having a tough time, the biggest problem for the BBC is how rich they look in comparison to them with their guaranteed income that comes from the licence fee. Now, I'm not having a go about the licence fee. I'm a huge supporter. But the thing that goes and therefore we must pay all our executives so much money because of the competitive climate, is a terrible argument in
economic downturn.
Are you
saying these people
should be... It's simply not true.
Are you saying these people should be very grateful to actually have jobs in this climate?
I'm saying this is your opportunity at this point. If you want to make the argument about commercial being in a commercial marketplace, the boom years is the time to make that argument. And this point right now, while your commercial rivals are on their knees, is the point at which you go, I'm sorry, but we have to cut costs. You have a job security and a situation where we are not dependent on a share price or ad revenue. So we have to, adjust our belts accordingly. I don't know what a bonus system is if it isn't about that. It certainly isn't about not defrauding your viewers, for example, apparently.
The BBC say it is practicing performance-related pay because it cut Janet Bennett's and Jenny Abramsky's bonuses by up to 40%. They only got to £23,000 and £19,000, respectively.
Well, I mean, obviously, that is ridiculous. What do you... I just...
Well, I mean, comes from... basically, the pay rose nearly 8%, compared with a rise for the rest of the staff of about 4%.
Well, I think the key point here is... I agree with what Janine said, but the other key point here is, look, the BBC is public money. It's money that actually comes in automatically via the licence fee. There is a degree of accountability when you're spending public money, and with that, of course, you know, I think there should be appropriate rewards for executives. But let's remember that if you're in a commercial organisation, a large part of what you're paid for is to actually bring the revenue in the first place, and the BBC income comes in anyway. So what you're doing is rewarding people for spending wisely. That's fine. But, you know, the real test, as Janine was saying, an economic downturn, is getting the cash in to keep yourself going. And BBC executives don't have to do that. So I would say, absolutely, you know, if you look at what BBC executives do, you look at the current climate, they are fairly rewarded for what they do.
Jane Bennett, who you just said, and, you know, self-facingly sort of turned down 60% of her bonus and just took the 23 grand, but also got a pay rise of £103,000.
Which is 25%, wasn't it? Or nearly that?
Yeah.
In the
£103,000 pay rise. I don't care what the percentage is. That's just obscene.
It's obscene, and you would not get that in any commercial
broadcaster.
Frankly,
you barely escape disciplinary action.
No.
Similarly, Jenny Abramsky, it walked away with a pension pot of, what was it, £4 million?
Now, largest in the corporation, apparently.
Jenny Abramsky has been a dedicated public servant. If it was up to me, millions of pounds they should be with her. On the other hand, there are quite a lot of other dedicated public servants out there, and that is an obscene amount of money. The BBC has to watch this stuff, and every year they seem to be surprised by headlines about what they're paying. I don't understand why.
No, there's something missing in terms of their understanding of being connected to the market. You know,
yeah.
If you're out there and you're a company trying to survive, you know, it's a very, very tough world right now, and I think the BBC is a little bit cosy. I've worked in both the commercial sector and the BBC for long periods of time, and the BBC does tend to be a bit inward-looking still, despite all the changes that have gone on, and I suspect people in the BBC are not feeling the chill winds we're receiving.
Their performance is incredibly strong at the moment. You can't knock them on the performance.
And for them for that. And they're
that
doing it because
excellent.
They're making great programmes,
yeah.
And that's fair enough.
But their commercial rivals will be queuing up to say they are outperforming us because they've got more money to spend than us, and it's not fair because the market doesn't allow for us to spend the same sort of money to compete properly. So at that point, despite the fact that they may, in each of these individual executives may have the best argument for a pay rise or a bonus or whatever, they have to take a collective decision that goes, it does not look good.
Yeah, it's about how it looks as much as anything, exactly right. Because it just sends a message that the BBC is not actually aware that people, you know, finding it tough to fill their food basket. They can't buy or sell their houses. You know, fuel, petrol prices are going up. It's tough out there. And the BBC...
Andy Duncan probably can't get a chauffeur car to lunch anymore.
Actually, they can't. And the BBC sails on regardless.
This is a really good point because there is a lot of economic belt tightening to be had because even in the BBC, actually, because the last licence fee settlement was below inflation, but of course inflation's running much higher now. The fact that the BBC's worried its electricity bill is going to go up from £50 million a year to £60 million a year. So there may even be further redundancies needed because of this inflation pressure.
That's not good news for the online overspend, is it? That's going to be responsible for another 40 million quid next year. Oops.
But you know what? Material costs like that are part of running any organisation. You have to manage it. And, you know, frankly, if the economy is shrinking, the BBC can't expect to continue growing or being disproportionate. It's already, in fact, really disproportionately funded. It will just make that situation worse. So I'm afraid if times are tough, the BBC may have to make cuts as well. That's the reality of the world we're in.
And can I just, sorry, because Emily's not here, but having singled out Jaina and Jenny, it is worth mentioning Ashley. We're going to have to mention Ashley Highfield. I'm sorry, Ashley, you took the money. You're going to have to be named and shamed.
Ashley Highfield's salary went up by £106,000 to £466,000 a year.
In a year when he went approximately £36 million over budget. Now, the interesting new fact
you'd
on
get
that
fired
is,
in the commercial sector for that.
Of course you'd get fired
you would
in the
be
commercial
fired,
sector.
You know, that's it.
No, it's just ridiculous.
And you wouldn't earn that either. You'd be lucky to earn half that.
Can I just say, the new interesting fact on the digital overspend, about which obviously we hardly ever mention here at Guardian Towers, is that £24.9 million of it was due to misallocation, which is what they've said. It's just that everybody else has been spending against digital budgets, not digital budget holders' fault. Yeah, £36 million, take away £24.9 million. As I've said before, I'm no budgetary genius. I don't claim that I wouldn't go over budget myself. Yeah, that's still a missing £12 million quid, isn't it? They still went over budget by £12 million all by their good selves.
Let's move on to the BBC Trust report. So the BBC set out six high-level objectives for the next year, including making itself more distinctive from other broadcasters. It does that every year. Actually, the first three are quite short and snappy, so I'm going to read them. It's to maintain the maximum reach consistent with its purposes and values, to seek to increase the distinctiveness and quality of its output, and to restore trust in its output following last year's editorial failings. Panel, anything to say on that? They all seem rather sensible.
Well, the reach one's very important because it's really important that the BBC does not have a share-chasing game. You know, it should be about maximising reach, that's fine, because that's about underpinning the licence fee, because everybody pays the licence fee. So it's important the BBC reaches out to everybody, but that's different to share maximisation, and there is a real risk the BBC chases ratings too hard. So I think that's a really important point, and they need to do more to underpin it's about reach, not share.
Essentially, as I say, I think they are rarely having a fantastic time in performance terms. Amongst all broadcasters, there's just nothing you can say about the BBC's performance at the moment. The quality of the output is generally incredibly high.
I agree.
As far as I'm concerned, my only carping is about the money.
You were going to mention DAB, weren't you?
I was, actually. I mean,
this raised my eyebrow, because at the risk of us being accused of undermining DAB in this country yet again, but the BBC Trust actually pointed out in the report, how badly DAB is doing. Public awareness of digital services remains low, with only 41% of the population having even heard of them. Six Music and One Extra only attracting around 500,000 listeners a week, and these services are what, 6, 7, 8 years old?
I mean, the reality is those figures are not actually that bad in context of the number of sets out in the marketplace, and DAB has been slower to take off than people expected. I think the really significant thing here is not so much about the actual numbers, it's more the fact that BBC has, for the first time in 20 years, actually really questioned DAB. It has never, ever said we have any doubt about DAB. Jenny's always held the line that we're behind DAB solidly. It's the commercial sector who've questioned it, because, you know, there's no commercial argument for investing in DAB because you don't get your money back fast enough. So I think that what the issue here is, will the BBC raising a question mark over DAB further damage the confidence in DAB and thereby further damage its chance of becoming a replacement service? Because the challenge for radio is it's got to have something to replace FM and AM, and DAB is the only game in town at the moment.
I do actually notice in the report that they say that podcasts have become very popular, and I think we here at Guardian Towers can take a bit of congratulation for that too. Right, let's wrap it up there. We've got plenty more analysis about that all over at mediaguardian.co.uk. This is Media Talk with Matt Wells. Without Matt Wells, with me, Robert Freeman. The sound you're hearing is the bottom of the barrel being scraped. Still to come, Gareth McLean's here to talk intergalactic Time Lords, Choir Boys and Bone Kickers. Not necessarily in that order. And we get down and dirty to catch up with the High Court shenanigans concerning Max Mosley and the news of the world. But first, time to talk radio. And this week, the Arqiva Commercial Radio Awards were held in central London. Now, if you are unfamiliar with radio awards, if you think of the FA Cup being a bit like the Sony's, then the Arqiva's a bit like the Carling Cup. Magic 105.4 won Station of the Year for their mix of more music and less talk, and there were plenty of other gongs picked up by stations and presenters who have nothing whatsoever to do with the BBC. Paul Robinson, you were there, sat on a table with Radio 2 controller Leslie Douglas and Channel 4 boss Bob Shannon, I understand.
Oh, posh friends.
Yes, posh friends, with Ben Green too, the producer
next
of this
to a rather,
podcast.
What was he doing on the table with all the
Leslie Douglas was a sandwich between Ben and I.
He tells me there was a rather gloomy-looking global group.
Well, there were very few people from Global there. There was Richard Park and I think one other. But I guess they're probably spending all their time firing staff. But, I mean, I have to say, the awards were not that bad, actually. I mean, these awards have got better every year. And, you know, they're not the Sonys, but actually, the standard of staging and production this year was pretty good. And I think you have to say Commercial Radio is getting its act together with the awards. So to be fair, I think they were OK.
More on that lot in a moment. But let's first hear from the big winner of the event, Magic's Neil Fox. He was handed a special gold award for a glittering career behind the mic. Producer Ben asked Foxy what it all meant to him.
I did a business degree, and so I'm very aware there's a business head on me that perhaps why I've done well in this business, that I'm always thinking about we are a business at the end of the day, but we've got to be an entertaining business. And I think radio must never forget that ultimately we've got to make great radio. If we're just there as a place to put out adverts for people, then it's going to become very dull. You know, what we need to be is, as the BBC have done over the last few years, they've become very entertaining. Commercial radio needs to be that as well, so that we can beat them.
You mentioned your business degree there. You also, when you were picking up your award, you said your dad's still waiting for you to get a serious job. Is that why you took on the doctor mantle?
Well, so I had an air of seriousness about me. Now, the doctor thing happened by accident because I was doing a show called The Late Night Surgery. And so if I was doing a surgery, I was going to be the doctor in charge of it. And it was a name that I loved and it stuck. So it was just a sort of a great, to use the modern phrase, organic creation there. It just happened and evolved. But, you know, people still in the street will call me Doctor. Most guys will call me Doctor. Most girls will call me Foxy. That's, you know, those will be my names. They'll be them for life.
Currently number one in London, but this is a very difficult time for commercial radio. The global group, they've just got rid of 6 or 7 producers. They're making cutbacks. It's a difficult advertising period. How are you experiencing life 25 years in as a commercial radio jock?
Well, it is a completely different radio map to just 6 years ago. And do you know what I think's become really good is global, I think, will be really good for radio. I think they've got some people that really understand broadcasting and understand music radio, which is what they do, and that's really important. They're privately owned. I think that's superb, because no longer are we trying to play to the city anymore, which is always a problem. EMAP having sold to Bauer, fantastic. Bauer have been brilliant, because they haven't really stuck their nose in at all. You know, they paid $1.4 billion and wrote this incredible check out, and yet, you know, they're just kind of letting everyone get on with it. I mean, what they bought is a successful station and some good management and some good staff, and they're trusting them to get on with it. But obviously there's investment there to change things and develop it. So I think it's a very, very interesting time for commercial radio.
Neil Fox there. Let's talk more broadly about the commercial radio landscape. And now Global Radio rather controversially won a chairman's award at the Arquivas. I guess more for their promise of doing great things for the industry than making 7 staff redundant, which they did this week as well. We did try and talk to Global's Richard Park and Jonathan Richards at the awards. They're keeping shtum at the moment after Lee Homewood's story went up on the website earlier this week. A bit explosive, to say the least. Paul, what do you make of the cutbacks?
Well, I think this is inevitable, really. I mean, there's 2 things going on here. One is obviously the economic downturn continues to make radio very difficult. But also, if you're going to buy something like GCAP, you want to take costs out of the business. And let's also not remember that Richard Park and the other investors have got their own money in there. So they're absolutely looking to get an exit at some point in the future. So they're totally incented to cut costs to make more money to the bottom line. And the radio have to make its way. I think what this really shows to me is the death now, or near death, of local commercial radio. Because what they've done with the local stations like the Trents and the other historic ILRs is they've now got 2 presenters a day, basically. You know, breakfast and drive time meet with a bit of music in the middle. So local is just going. And I think what you're seeing here is commercial radio moving to a networking model.
Bauer Radio, they seem to be doing a good job.
Well, Bauer are interesting. I mean, Bauer have taken over EMAP, and in fact, Bauer basically haven't cut people. They've kept D4, they've kept Mark Story, the 2 key executives, and they're working through as they are. And it's interesting because Bauer's strategy is very different to Global's strategy. We'll see. I mean, I think for Bauer, radio is a nice add-on because they've got all their publishing businesses and they see radio as a brand extension rather than being, you know, a core business. I mean, Global is a pure radio play, so they've got to make the money out of the radio.
Now, Bob Shannon was on your table. He left early. Clearly, plenty of work to do there. But Channel 4 Radio, I noticed they're advertising a Media Guardian this week. They want a commissioning editor, digital editor, and music manager. My CV's in the post. Word is E4 Radio will launch in January. Janine. Come on, is it going to happen?
Won't. I can't remember who it was. I was on here a long time ago, last time I was allowed on, and I said, I'll bet you 50 quid it won't launch this year. And everyone went, yes, it will, yes, it will. And it won't. So I'm now upping it.
Not
to,
me, I wasn't
April.
Here.
No, it wasn't you.
No.
April, I reckon. I hear, in fact, this is not my this is not my strategic guess. I hear April.
Paul, any advance on April?
I couldn't possibly disclose my private conversation with Bob Shannon. April. I mean, I think the interesting issue here is what are they going to launch? Because they had three stations in mind, a Radio 1-like station, a Radio 2-like station, and a Radio 4-like station.
No.
The music station will launch at some point. The big question is, will the Radio 4 type station, the more for radio station, launch? And I think the answer to that is it will never launch.
They will never launch it.
It's just too expensive.
Too expensive. And also, what would you hope to gain? Somebody said to me, look at Radio 4. Look at Radio 4. What on earth do they think they're going to do against Radio 4 with a fraction of the budget, with nothing like the resource, with nothing like the sort of history, experience, longevity, brand reach, all those things? It's just not ever going to happen.
I mean, look, there is a gap in the market for intelligent speech radio. I mean, I ran Talk Radio as chief executive, so I know there's a gap in the market. But the economics of delivering it outside the BBC are virtually impossible. That is the challenge. When you've got the Radio 4 doing incredibly great things and being incredibly strong, funded by public money. So, you know, they haven't got that need to bring advertising revenue in. It's not going to happen.
Right format, wrong time, maybe.
He's so good, isn't he? I mean, 5 minutes of crap and then suddenly two words.
Yeah.
Sums it all up. Brilliant.
Chris
That's why he's gone pink.
Chris Tarrant's back on the... It's also very hot in here, Producer Ben. Can you push... Is there a button you can push? Chris Tarrant is back on the airwaves, signed for a year by GMG, our sister company, to go head-to-head with Jonathan Ross on their network stations. Exciting or a desperate scream for help to overcome the Beeb?
This is very good, actually. I think this is actually, there's two very good things about this. The first thing is there's a new funding model, because what's happened is, in fact, Nissan, the sponsor, have signed Tarrant, and then Nissan have basically plastered all over the Century and the Smooth stations all over the UK, and then GMG get the advertising revenue and they get Chris Tarrant. So it's a very smart commercial model. That's the first thing to say. The second thing is, hats off to commercial radio, exactly what they should be doing, signing big names, people who've actually made the name in commercial radio, like Tarrant, and putting him up against a BBC opponent. So I hope it works, because it's a very brave experiment and it will help to drive audience to commercial radio. So I hope they do more of it, and I say hats off to GMG for doing it.
We'll be following the story, and in fact, for these stories and more, you'll find them on mediaguardian.co.uk/radio. Formula One chief Max Mosley and the News of the World have been in the High Court this week. Mosley suing the Red Top for invasion of privacy after they filmed him up to all sorts of non-family-friendly fun in a Chelsea basement. Mosley denies there were any Nazi overtones or indeed undertones to his afternoon with the five prostitutes. The News of the Screws says this was anything but a, quote, watered-down comedy version of Allo, Allo. So just your regular invasion of privacy case then. Chaps, where are we on this? We've got News of the World reporter Neville Furlbeck said he needed to film the orgy because of the, quote, very, very high standard of proof required by his newspaper. Mm. Now, I don't know about you, I'm not used to seeing the words very, very high standard and News of the World in the same sentence.
Do you know, I think you're being unnecessarily cynical there. If the tapping of phone lines case taught us nothing, it is that the News of the World requires actual, ideally actual voicemail footage of somebody's recorded messages before they'll run a story about, for example, the royal family's private lives. The idea that they would make something like that up. What we know is, whether it's criminal or not, they will produce the actual verifiable footage of it. There's no doubt about that.
And thank goodness they do, because, you know, I mean, it's obviously quite a serious allegation. I mean, whether this guy, you know, has done this or not, I mean, clearly he can't really hold his job down now. So, you know, you need to be pretty sure that actually what's happened is something like, you know, what they're saying has happened. I think the whole thing has been hilarious because of the, you know, the quotes that have come out. And if I can select one, I mean, this one lovely line about describing how the 68-year-old was being caned until blood was drawn, and then the QC cross-examining say, you say it was S&M, but blood was drawn. I know it was drawn because I had a plaster on his bottom.
There's a quote a bit further down the story where they asked whether or not the bottom was shaved. Yes, did they have their bottom shaved, as far as you know, he said.
I just think you're very puerile. I can't believe you're taking fun out of reading it.
It's shocking, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, shaving of bottoms, I've never heard of such a thing.
Exactly. My favourite thing is that Justice Edie, who is hearing this, and I'm sure having the time of his life, listening to all this nonsense over and over and over again,
but good nonsense.
is also looking after the preliminary hearings on the Guardian versus Tesco, which I think is a kind of quite abstruse piece of tax case law. And I rather like the idea of him going from Nazi orgy to corporation tax.
Well, away from all this, Christopher Mayer is stepping down as chairman of the PCC in March. Stephen Brook, who we'd normally expect to come into the pod live, can't be here because he's off for an expensive lunch in the Wolseley. But we literally crossed the newsroom to get this comment from him earlier.
Well, Sir Christopher is out of the Press Complaints Commission. His term ends in March next year, and it's not going to be renewed, much to the surprise of lots of people in the industry, and possibly to Sir Christopher himself. As I understand it, he was told yesterday by the head of PressBoff, which is the industry body that finances the Press Complaints Commission, that his term would not be renewed. And here we are, months and months before it actually expires, with the public announcement that they're searching for a successor and are going to advertise. The thing about Sir Christopher Mayer, and he had his supporters and obviously his detractors, is that he had a unique almost set of skills that enabled him to be quite an effective advocate for self-regulation of the press due to the constant and continual criticism that the PCC is just a toothless tiger. So he's a very good media performer. He had the gift of the gab, and he had access to the corridors of power as well, so he was able to get things happening and was quite a robust defender of the whole system to all comers, and he used to have rows with all sorts of people like John Prescott and John Simpson, etc., etc. Where I think he seems to have come unstuck, it seems, is in this very recent controversy over Peter Hill, who was the Daily Express editor involved in the Madeleine McCann libel action, who was basically thrown off the PCC earlier this year. And it appears that Sir Christopher was a strong advocate of that decision. Other people in the industry less happy for it to occur. So there seems to have been a lot of controversy over that, and he upset quite a few people in the industry.
I hope someone else is paying for that lunch.
Janine, do you fancy taking over from him?
As chair of the PCC, I think it's going to be disbanded. I foresee some sort of reform of the regulator. We haven't reformed the regulator for several years, so I think it's time for, there'll be something.
New regulator, new teeth.
Yeah, so I'll give it a pass this time. Wait till I see the new shape.
Would you, Adam and Steve, it? We've only been joined by The Guardian's top TV writer, Gareth McLean.
Hello.
It's lovely to have you here.
It's nice to be here. Where's Maggie?
Mother of two, Maggie Brown.
Orgy with Max Mosley. That's really nice.
Let's just not go there. How are you doing, and what have you been watching?
I'm all right, thank you. Well, I'm all right despite watching Bone Kickers. I think it's a proviso there. I can see Janine ready to leap to its defence.
I'm giving Bone Kickers the Torchwood Cup.
It's just not even that good.
We should say that Janine's on large amounts of painkillers.
I wasn't when I watched Bone Kickers.
Well, but you needed them afterwards.
Right.
It's atrocious, come on.
Doctor Who finale. Now, I have to make a media admission here in the fact that The Last Pop Doctor Who is still sitting on my TiVo. So while you talk about it,
I'm going to put my hands over my TiVo and go la 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 la
while you talk about it.
Streaming Sky Plus. It's finished now.
Did you think that the second one was as good as the first
one? Well, no, but I don't think it can be. No. Do you know what I mean? Those two parts, in any sort of thing, is going to be a letdown, not just Doctor Who.
It was the same with The House season finale. Did you watch that?
I didn't know.
Because they did a similar thing with the two-part season finale. And the first part was so unbelievably ear-bleedingly good. And you just thought, anything could happen. And then in
that's
the second
sort of
one...
the problem, that you're going to inevitably be disappointed.
To build up to the start of the next
It was series. Just too much there. It was just like, oh my God, not... You know, it's like everything was chucked in, wasn't it?
It was very busy.
Very busy. It was very busy.
Very busy. Yes. Like one of Matt's outfits.
Yes.
So far too much going on all at once.
And it was a shame when the Doctor died, wasn't it?
And the Daleks got beaten too quickly. I mean, the Daleks...
It's nice to see Tom Baker back, though, wasn't it?
Yes, thank you. Right. So Russell T. Davies' last show, is it, a good swan song for him?
Well, I think he'll be very pleased.
9.8 million's okay.
It is. BBC Drama's been doing very well.
It's not quite his last show because he's got his four specials next year.
Yeah, but he's not writing any of those, I don't think.
Is he not?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I just
made that up. Exclusive Doctor Who news.
Apparently he's not writing anymore.
So the Cybermen not written by him?
I don't think
really?
So.
Really?
Are you sure?
I might be wrong. No, I'm not sure.
Maybe he'll be in the suit.
I have been on Outpost Gallifrey. I didn't check that detail, but I think he is writing.
Well, I hear from a source who knows about these things, my friend Stuart.
He'll get withdrawal symptoms.
Who,
he will.
Who, yes, apparently not. That's the last thing he's writing for it. Fancy.
Last Choir Standing.
Yes. I did, actually, because I was on Simon Mayo on a rival broadcaster. Are we a broadcaster? Or is this narrowcasting?
We are the very definition of not a broadcaster. What with us not broadcasting in any way.
Oh.
But it's one-to-many, so it's still broadcasting. One-to-one, one-to-many.
We don't have any broadcast network.
Yeah, but it goes out to lots of people.
But we don't.
One-to-many.
Well, 10.
I do a deck on that, and I say one-to-many, broadcasting. I get paid for that.
I wonder whether it's worth mixing this format of Last Choir Standing with, say, Channel 5's prison programme, where you vote off the choir into the prison.
Oh, so they could get bum rapes. Yeah, brilliant.
I'm loving how Robert is still just desperately trying to cling on to what we're supposed to be.
Well.
So God love him.
Yes. Oh, yes. Last Choir Standing meets, bang up, David Blunkett. Isn't that what he did to Kimberly Quinn?
And John Prescott's going to front a new BBC Two series on pies. Oh, hang on, sorry, on class.
Class.
Is that really what we want the licence fee money to go?
Well, I'd rather there than bone kickers,
no,
frankly.
No, see, I was just going to say, frankly, as long as there's enough room left to piss some away on the brilliance that is bone kickers.
It's not brilliant.
Can you summarise what it's about? All I know is that Adrian Lester's in it. My mum loves Adrian Lester.
I love Lady... what's his name?
And indeed my mum.
Him. I like him very much.
He's quite charismatic.
He's got a lovely arse.
It is. It's somewhere around... I mean, everybody said this, but there's a bit of CSI because
there
they do a bit of...
Oh, those process
yeah,
scenes.
Yeah, they do
they're
that thing
so
of, you know,
ropey.
Right, now I'm going to put this under the UV light and it'll go all a bit
I'm just
going
to wait for this printer to spew out a little print. Oh, look, it's a graph with lines on.
There's a bit of forensic archaeology going on.
Which is really boring to watch because they just don't do it with the style of CSI. And then they say lines like... What the hell is a Middle Eastern coin doing in the middle of a park in Somerset? We've got a medieval riddle to solve.
Is there lots of striding around in long coats?
Well, there is. There's a bit of lab coat.
There's some
going
striding.
On.
There's a lot of frowning. There's clearly some personal trauma. There's a
having burnt all these crosses, the cross that Jesus was crucified on, they set fire to them and then went, shall we go to the pub? Oh, yeah, they're really cool. I love
and
them.
And then just as you're thinking this is excellent because it's really, really laughable, but in a really good way, and I'm completely loving this, much like Torchwood, somebody gets out a sword and completely decapitates someone apropos of nothing in the middle of an underground tunnel.
Oh, that was to make it relevant to today.
That was the making it relevant bit, was
yeah.
it?
Is okay. this the kind of programme that we can expect a spin-off on BBC Three, a bit like Torchwood?
Oh, I don't
if they
know.
Don't do a spin-off just immediately.
Bonus.
I was going to say kick boners as opposed to bone kickers.
Kick boners, is that like militant feminists?
And that, if we can wrestle some discipline to the pod, because I want to wrap this up, that's your lot for the week. Head over to the blog on Organ Grinder for the links to all the stories we've discussed. And if you want to give us your feedback, post something complimentary or indeed condescending to our Facebook wall. My thanks to Janine Gibson for getting through with all that, you know, drug-induced everything.
I think I might have talked over Gareth a bit too much.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Well,
Paul Robinson,
not here.
Thank
Someone
you very much.
And lovely cookies, thank you very much.
Gareth McLean, thank you very much.
Yeah,
the Media
whatever.
Guardian 100 is out on Monday. Will there be top trumps for the Media Guardian this year, Janine?
Oh, God, I wish, Robert. And if you're not in it, I'm sorry.
I think I came out.
I, however.
104. If you are, in fact, listening to this after Monday, what a surprise. Who'd have thought they'd have been at number one? Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Robert Freeman. I'm off to do a stint for a weekend fill-in on Gaydar Radio. See you later.
What, you're plugging your other shows?
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.